60 years after his death, here we are talking about Toscanini. Can you explain the degree of his fame in his lifetime? To say that he was and remains famous is an understatement, but what was it like when people were actually hearing his concerts? Who was he to them?
Well, you know, I can't tell you that from a personal point of view because I was only 8 years old when Toscanini stopped conducting. But I know from my research and from having talked with many, many people worked with him, people from his family, people who simply listened to his concerts and so on, that Toscanini was, you know, a household name. I mean, in his day, certainly in Italy and in North America, perhaps not everywhere in the world, but, you know, very widely, he was very widely known in Europe and South America and so on and so forth. So, you know, I think it was a combination, especially during the latter phase of his career, let's say when he was in his 60s, 70s, and 80s, that both the musical value of his work and at the same time his unsought but nonetheless real fame as an opponent of the fascist and Nazi regimes combined to make him a kind of, in a way, heroic figure for many, many people. And, of course, add to that the legend of his extremely demanding, exigent character, his also the stories of his photographic memory, his terrible temper, all those things combined to make Toscanini a kind of unique figure in the classical music world.
Can you expand a little bit on the title of the book? You alluded to it a bit, but it's called Toscanini, Musician of Conscience. Can you explain what you mean by that title?
Well, I think that in most of the aspects of his life, he was a person of tremendous... I should say he was a person whose conscience as a musician and as a human being determined his actions. Now, he was not that way in his dealings with his wife and with his many lovers over the decades. But with respect to both his art and the arts in general, culture in general, on the one hand, and also with respect to his various stands on public issues, he was a man of conscience, and since he was a musician, he was a musician of conscience. So that's really what I intended by that, by choosing that particular subtitle.
Your first biography of Toscanini was published in 1978, and you've also edited collections of his letters. Now you've written a brand new book. What have you discovered about Toscanini since 1978?
Well, as I've been telling people, you know, he hasn't been very active since then. He was already dead in 1978, and he's still dead now. But as far as the documentation of his life and career, it's a night and day situation. So on the one hand, I'm very glad that I did that early biography because at that time I had access to a reasonable amount of documentation, but also I had direct access to his children, his grandchildren, his many of the people who had worked with him were still very much alive at that time, friends and so on. So I had, you know, firsthand accounts of his life, his character, his work, etc. But at that time, the Toscanini family's gigantic archives were out of bounds. They were packed up and stored in the basement of the New York Public Library for the Performing Arts at Lincoln Center. And no one, not even members of the Toscanini family, had access to them at that time. La Scala's archives were incomplete. the Ricordi Publishing Company's archives, which contained a lot of correspondence between the young Toscanini and the publisher. Those were out of bounds, unavailable, uncatalogued, and so on, et cetera, et cetera. So all of this material, plus about 1,500 letters that he wrote over the years to various people, which had not yet been, they hadn't come to the surface yet when I did the early biography, and in a way, best of all, the more than 100 conversation tapes that were made unbeknownst to him by his son in the maestro's last years. And of course, there he talks to family members and friends, and his memory was still fantastic, even in his late 80s. And, you know, he talks a lot about his work, about things that he did, about singers, about instrumentalists, about people he worked with, people he knew. So all of those things really enriched very, very much the story. And, you know, once all that material had come to the fore, that was when both my partner, Eve Wolf, and Toscanini's grandson, my good friend, Valfredo Toscanini, began to tell me, look, you've got to do a new biography because the old one has been completely superseded at this point.
You include newly discovered letters to young pianist Ada Mainardi. What do these letters add to the Toscanini story?
Well, those letters in particular, I mean, he was or seems to have been in love, deeply in love with her. He was 30 years her senior. He reveals a lot about himself in those letters that we don't find in any other source, or at least not to that extent. I mean, he talks about music. He could talk about music with her because she was a trained musician. He talks about his family. He talks about his youth. He talks about what he was currently doing over the span of basically 7 years in which those letters were written. So they tell us a lot about his activities in those days. They tell us about his attitudes on many, many subjects, politics, religion, love, sex, family, and so on and so forth. So they really are a goldmine of information about him. And, you know, it's important to stress the fact that Toscanini very, very rarely, only a handful of times in his nearly 70-year-long career, granted formal interviews. And so there's very little, there are very few statements of his intended for public consumption. And he never wrote about his life, you know. I began the preface, the foreword to my book, to this book, by quoting Toscanini as having said, as he does in one of the conversation tapes, if I thought people would be interested, I could have a lot to say, you know. Well, you know, that's the understatement of the century, because a lot of people, millions in those days, were certainly interested in him and, you know, would have appreciated knowing what he had to say about a lot of different subjects. But fortunately, we now have the unvarnished truth through his private correspondence and private conversations.
This is a man who knew Giuseppe Verdi, who conducted the premiere of La Bohème of Puccini, who stood up to Mussolini and Hitler, who, as you said, had an over 70-year career. We're still talking about him 60 years after his death. So I do have to ask you, I hope that people hear this interview and read your books and then go to Toscanini performances. What recordings to you are most iconic? What's a good introduction to the maestro's art?
Well, you know, we just, I and Christopher Diamond, who unfortunately died last year, we made a selection of 20 CDs, which Sony recently published, from among the, I guess, more or less 80 CDs of the original complete Toscanini set that was released in the early 90s. And I think that some of these recordings that Sony published this year really are key performances in the Toscanini canon. I mean, there's the the Beethoven Seventh with the New York Philharmonic in 1936, a couple of other items from his Philharmonic years, which, to my way of thinking, were really the culmination of his work as a symphonic conductor, just as his years at La Scala were the culmination in the 20s, were the culmination of his work as an opera conductor. Then there are the Verdi, Otello, and Falstaff, which I think are among the great opera recordings of all time. I think the Bohème recording, of course, is important because here's the guy who conducted the premiere with the composer breathing down his neck, conducting the same opera 50 years later, and really his whole soul into that performance. Jan Peerce, who sings the tenor lead in that recording, remembered seeing tears rolling down Toscanini's face as he conducted of that performance. So those and, you know, some of the Philadelphia recordings, the Schubert Great C Major Symphony, the Tchaikovsky Pathétique, et cetera, Debussy, La Mer, and Iberia, those are really, I think, essential Toscanini recordings. Then, of course, in addition to the authorized recordings, which have all been released, there are the live performance recordings. And some of the best of those are available on the Immortal Performances label from Canada, with the authorization of the Toscanini family. There's a Brahms cycle from 1935, various other performances mostly with the New York Philharmonic, but some with the NBC Symphony. Also, they've re-released the complete Meistersinger from Salzburg in 1937. So these are some of the sound on some of them is not very good because they were taken off the air in the 1930s, but they do, from a musical point of view, represent Toscanini at the peak of his powers.